This is Bike Tourist Podcast, show number 10. My name is Gabriel, and welcome to everybody, especially if you are new to this podcast. We have an announcement. The Spanish version of the podcast is now available. The URL is biketouristesp.podomatic.com. biketouristesp.podomatic.com. The podcast phone is 206-339-4425. Go there and leave some comments and ask questions regarding the shows. Call me. The call is free. So, I need that you call so I can get some feedback. And you can also leave comments on the page for each show. It's like a blog. So you can go there and leave some comments like some other listeners. So, now we have Mr. Alastair Humphreys from London, and he's going to talk about his 46,000 miles around the world. And we have him here now. Alastair, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hello.
Okay, talk us about what was the motivation for doing this big adventure?
Well, I was coming up to the end of my time at university in England, and I just didn't feel ready yet to get a job, get a wife, and get a mortgage, and get a dog, and all these kind of things that tie you down. And I just felt the energy and enthusiasm in me for one big adventure. And I figured if I was going to do a big adventure, I should do a really big one. So I ended up deciding to try to cycle around the world. But when I started, and I didn't actually think I'd finish it, but I thought at least I would start and have a go.
Okay. How did you plan for that route? The route, what was the logistic behind that? Because, you know, is this started like something small and then grew up, or you from the beginning you wanted to go around the world?
No, at the beginning, my first thing was I wanted to cycle from England to India. But then I thought, if I get to India, I've got all that way, I might as well carry on a bit further down through Asia, go and see Australia. And if I get to Australia, I might as well carry on over to America, and on and on and on, until it grew and grew, until I suddenly realized I'd made this plan that involved trying to cycle around the whole world.
Okay, how you got information on where you were going to go, how the best route, because you can plan that on your country, because you have all the resources, you can call, you can maybe have friends around the whole area, but in those countries where you had no one, and how did you manage to get all the resources you have for planning this big adventure?
Yeah. Before I left home, I spent a lot of time daydreaming about the trip and planning, and sort of investigating on the internet, reading different websites and learning about which routes were interesting, and learning about visa problems and the sort of difficulties with bureaucracy around the world. And then when I set off, I knew that in some areas of the world I was going to have to be very organized. Things like the visas that I'd have to get a few months in advance. I knew there would be some countries that didn't have bike shops, so I wouldn't be able to buy spare parts. So I knew in those countries I had to have those parts all shipped out to me in advance before I got there. So it required quite a lot of forward planning, thinking a few months ahead about what the situation would be like in a few months' time. But then on the day-to-day level, it was pretty spontaneous, and really just having to be really flexible about what adventures came along that day. So I just talked to local people and try and find out from them which was an interesting road to take, which was the beautiful scenic route. And so I day-to-day things, it was pretty much unplanned, but then long-term was very planned.
Okay, I was checking on your website, and I read that you kept your expenses low, buying only what was necessary. In practice, how hard was it?
The finances was a big difficulty of the whole thing, really. I started just after university, so I'd been saving up money, and obviously students don't have much money, so I didn't really have that much, but I didn't want something like money to stop me having the adventure of a lifetime. So I decided that I had two choices. I could either go for a short trip and stay in hotels and eat nice food, or I could go on a very long trip and sleep in my tent and eat bananas every day, which is what I decided to do. So it was quite hard. It was quite hard. It was quite stressful to never buy chocolate, to never buy Coke, you know, to always be trying to live as cheap as possible. But I also knew that it would help me keep going and keep riding for longer, the longer I could make my money last. Most countries in the world are so much cheaper than Britain or the States, and most countries in the world you can live very, very cheaply and eat very, very cheaply. So I don't ever like to think of money as being a good excuse for not getting off and starting your ride.
Yeah, I remember. I have a Chinese friend. He's actually in the States, but on his tenure at the university I work for, he told me that with $200 you can live like a king in China. So,
Oh yes. Yeah, I was in China. You can $2 a day, you can eat out for three meals a day, and you're eating good food as well. So yeah, I found actually that cycling through America was one of the hardest times for me, because for $2 you can't buy very nice food, whereas in China you can buy good food for that.
yeah. Okay. I'm talking about countries. How many countries did you visit on your ride?
I went to 60 countries.
60 countries, and how many continents? I think like five, right?
Yeah, five. I went through Europe, through the Middle East, down to Africa, up through South America, through North America, and across Asia, back home to Britain. So I missed out Australia, and I missed out Antarctica, but I've got to save something for the future.
Okay, but you're planning to ride a bike on Antarctica?
Well, you always have to have something to dream about, don't you?
It would be interesting. Okay, can you share some good times and some lousy good times from your adventure on the road?
I think the good times really were times like, I suppose there's two sort of good times. There's the good times when you're with other people. So in Africa especially, when I get to a village round about sunset in the evening, and you get surrounded by loads of little children, and they really curious to figure out who is this strange person who's arrived in their lives, and they take you off to see the head of the village, and everyone gets very excited, and they fight, and they welcome you into the village, find you a place to sleep, and you end up spending the night in this great little village, a place you've never seen before, a place you'll never see again, but something that you won't forget as well. So I suppose the generosity and the hospitality of the strangers I met all over the world was a real highlight. The other sort of highlight, I suppose, is the freedom that being on a bike gives you, the chance to just pedal wherever you want, whenever you want, stop when you want, to see, to enjoy the view, to enjoy the scenery. So, and then the chance to camp on the top of mountains or by lakes or by rivers, and these brilliant wild campsites where there's no one around for miles and miles. I absolutely love those sort of lonely times as well. They were quite spectacular.
Yeah, so you had a lot of time for yourself. Being alone on most of the routes, where you're traveling, what was your daily routine?
I left home because I wanted to get away from routine, and I wanted to do something a bit different, but I quickly realized that life on a bike was very, very routine as well. So every day I'd get up usually about sun just about sunrise, and cook myself a bit of coffee, have some bread and famous and bananas for breakfast, then pack everything up. And you get so quick at the cooking and the camping that I could be, from waking up, I'd be pedaling 10, 20 minutes later, and then I'd just set off and pedal all day, stopping often to eat snacks, stopping to take photos, stopping to look at interesting things. But basically, I would just pedal all day until sunset, and then as the sun's setting, you start to look for a campsite. So either, depending on how much energy I had, if I had lots of energy, I'd go to a village and stay in a village, because that's it's much more interesting like that. But it's also quite exhausting to be surrounded by strangers. So if I was a bit tired, then I'd look for somewhere where I could just be on my own. So I'd look for some nice secret place where no one would find me, in some trees or hidden away somewhere. And then when there's no cars around or people, I'd run off into the trees, put up my tent and set up my stove again, cook my dinner, which was usually pasta with a few vegetables thrown in, read my book for a couple of hours with my flashlight, and then time for bed. So I go to bed really, really early after doing about 7 or 8 hours of pedaling. So it became a pretty standard daily routine as well.
Yes, since you were on those countries, how did you manage to go over the language barrier in some places where people don't speak English? How did you manage to let your needs be known or communicating with people?
Yeah, language is a real, obviously a big important part of traveling. And everywhere I went, I'd try and learn a few words and try and learn enough to get by. The important things, please, thank you, bread, water, bicycle, these sort of important words of my life. Also, everywhere I went, I would have a letter that I would, whenever I found someone who could speak English and another language, I'd get them to translate this letter into the local language, so it's saying who I was and about my history and my family and about the ride I was doing, and just so people I met could sort of understand a bit about me. And also, when I first got to a new country, when I got to the first city, I'd go to the local newspaper office and I'd walk in there and say, "Hello, I'm cycling around the world. Do you want to write a little story about me for your newspaper?" And usually, it's sort of easy, quick news. So they'd write a little story, and then I'd cut that out of the paper the next day, and I'd carry that with me through the country. And that was always a brilliant thing to have, because people think that if you're in the newspaper, you must be famous. So that really, people really liked that, seeing my little newspaper articles, and that would sort of tell them a bit about who I was as well.
Yeah.
Also, I'd carry, sorry, also I had an inflatable globe with a map of the world with my route drawn on it in a permanent pen. And also I carried photographs of me at different places with my bike, so like by the pyramids or by the Great Wall of China, places like this, so I could show people a little bit about my journey as well.
Okay, in which country did you have the your most interesting adventures?
Oh, that's a very hard question. I really enjoyed China because 'cause the language there is so difficult. You can't even read the signposts there. So I really felt like a complete stranger there. I didn't know what was going on. You can't read a single thing, and it makes life very exciting like that when you're completely dependent on the help of local people along the way. So I loved that. Plus, it's so varied. The variety of the landscapes there was fantastic, and brilliant food as well, and really nice, fun people. So my few months cycling across China was one real highlight, but it's very hard to choose a favorite place in the whole world.
Okay, tell us about Hope and Homes. You know that you are spearheading this this initiative for this project. Talk to us about it.
I decided when I was going to cycle around the world, I decided that if I was going to do this, then I could try and make some good come from it as well. So I approached a charity called Hope and Homes for Children, which is a British charity, but they work in lots of countries around the world, in Eastern Europe and in Africa, helping children who've been orphaned through war, disaster, and more through HIV/AIDS now. So through my trip, I was trying to raise money for them by doing talks, slideshows, and whenever I did anything, interviews for newspapers or magazines, I'd always try and talk about the charity just to try and raise awareness for them, and to raise money for them too. And I was very lucky. I went to visit them in four different countries, and seeing the kids in the homes there, and seeing the difference to their lives that Hope and Homes was making was really inspirational, and helped keep me a bit pedaling on when I was getting a bit depressed or motivation was low.
Yeah. Okay. One thing. What was the most challenging aspect of your journey? You had many challenging things. Going this big an adventure, but there are things that are bigger than the others. What was the most challenging aspect? The one that took most of your time dealing with?
I think the hardest thing of the trip was the loneliness, being on my own basically for 4 years. So for 4 years I didn't see my family, I didn't really have any friends. I was often in countries where I couldn't speak to people, or I was from a different religion, or I looked very different. So I was always in a real minority, And at times that's great because it is very interesting. You learn a lot, and people are very kind. But it's also quite tiring as well, to just always be on your own. And I found that the hardest thing of all. And the times that I came closest to quitting and to giving up the journey was always because of the loneliness of it.
Okay, basically, being alone this long journey affected you, missing the people that you left back home, right?
Yeah, and I think it was a really one of the good things of my trip was it really helped me learn how important my friends and family are in my life. And I made so many good friends around the world, but it was also very good to get back home to my real family and my old friends. And it's something that I've enjoyed the most about being home again, just spending time with all of them.
Yeah, it just reminds me of that song that it's just so nice to go traveling, but it's nicer to go home.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you appreciate it in the end.
Okay, in your writings, you say that impressions can be misleading, but usually they are not. Where are the life lessons learned by dealing with all kind of people?
I think I learned a lot about people because every single day I was having to look at strangers and having to decide just by looking at them whether I was going to trust them. You know, even small things like when you need directions to get out of a city and you have to pick somebody on the sidewalk to talk to, you obviously make a choice to whether the person looks intelligent or not. Same with at night when I was looking in, if I was getting to a village and trying to decide if I'd stay there, I'd have to decide looking just from looking at the people whether I felt I could trust them, whether I was safe. So I think I did get pretty good at having to judge people just quickly like that. And usually you're right. Of course, sometimes you're wrong. You shouldn't judge people just by their appearances. But often I found that I was right. And I also really found that in places where people were the poorest, the really poor parts of the world, people were a lot kinder and a lot more welcoming, and they didn't really think twice about inviting me into their house and sharing their food with me and looking after me. Whereas in some of the richer countries in the world, people, we tend to be more paranoid, we're more suspicious, and it's much easier for a cyclist in the poor parts of the world, I think.
Yeah, it's similar here. It's similar here. Our people here in Puerto Rico, we have a long tradition of being kind to people from outside. This has been affected in recent years. The development. We are now, very urbanized, and all this development, has set a fast pace for us that we are not still used to. I hope in 50 years we might be set up, but still, we have something to help in the people from outside. So if somebody comes looking for directions, we immediately spot that he's not from here, and we try to help as much as we can, So yeah, sometimes there is, we have a little suspicion, like, oh, what this guy is coming, can I trust him, but usually the gut feeling is to help. So, okay.
Yeah, good. Well, it sounds like I need to come cycling in Puerto Rico then.
Yeah. Yeah, you are invited. You are invited. Precisely. I last night I was a crazy guy on a bike, and I was reading a post from a lady by the name of Martha that she was planning to come here to the island, and she could not find much information about doing a tour in the island, about maps for bikes. I just answered her. There is none. There is none. Yeah, because the whole concept of touring here in the island is something alien. It's something alien.
Right.
Yeah, it's more if you are want to go to races, want to go mountain biking, all the popular stuff that everybody do, then you are at home. You can come, and there are plenty of places to run and to do all the kind of things. But touring, traveling by bike. It's a whole different concept, and people just don't get it. And this is in part one of the reasons as I started this podcast, just to bring bike tourism to people who doesn't have it. So, I told the lady, there is none, but I'll try to help you as much as I can. So I just started calling a few people until it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I started sending out emails to all the bike association here in the island to see if we can get something going, create some maps, localize places for people to stay during the adventure here in the island, which would not be easy. So, yeah, it's a small island, but it has a lot of hills, and once you get in the inner part of the island, you can get lost. Even if it's so small, we get lost ourselves in our car, so imagine a bike. But it would be a great experience, and I was planning to do a tour last summer before I broke my arm. But I'm looking forward for next summer. Maybe I'm going to do that tour. Okay, you also said, and I think this is important. I think this is important because I clearly identify with that when I do my travels and meet people and compare with the baggage I bring in on to what I see. You said, don't believe what you see on TV. The world really is a good place. This in line of my way of thinking. Talk to us. Elaborate on that.
Well, I think before I left home, I was quite scared about the dangers of traveling in some of these countries. And especially, I mean, a really good example is the Middle East. All my life in England, the Middle East has been on the news in England, and it's pretty much every day someone's killing somebody, and then the next day somebody else kills somebody else. And all you really see about this part of the world is crazy people murdering each other. So when I arrived in the Middle East on my bike, I was quite scared about how would I be treated. You know, someone from England, not a Muslim, not an Arab, how would people react to me? So I was really scared about that, and I was amazed at how quickly, though, I relaxed in Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and how safe I felt and how kind people were. It's one of the few parts of the world where I felt that I could leave my bike outside a shop and I knew it would be safe when I came out again. It's a part of the world where people invite you into their villages with genuine, spontaneous kindness, and they let you stay the night with them. And I made so many good friends in that part of the world. And all of that is so different to everything that I'd seen on television beforehand. And it's different to what I see now. I mean, I look on TV now, Lebanon this summer, it was terrible. The whole country fighting, bombing, and my memories of it were so different. So I think that being on the bike, you really see for yourself the reality of the 99% of people who just want to live a decent, normal life. And of course, if you're unlucky, you'll meet one of the 1% of crazy people. But 99% of the world was so kind, and I felt very, very safe in the Middle East. And that's totally different to what you would expect from what you see on television.
Yeah, relating to that experience, I remember when I started traveling out, I had different expectations from the country, especially when I went to the United States. We are part of the United States, but, you know, as you can recall, we are Latin. You know, it's the only part of the state that we are Latin. I have seen so many movies about, racism, bigotry and stuff. So I was thinking, you know, I was going to Texas, for example. I say, oh my God, because I was going there to have a training at a company, and I say, oh, how will people treat me? You know. So I just went there, and one day I was at the Capitol building and watching some of the beautiful paintings they have there of all the governors had been there. So I see this policeman looking at me. I say, oh my, I'm going to run into trouble. So I just moved to another place, and he followed me. And I keep moving, and he followed me. And then he just went the other way and got in front of me. So he said, oh, hello. He presented himself, and it started a nice conversation. He just wanted somebody to talk. So yeah, he just wanted somebody to talk. And then I met other people over there. People asked me, questions, where I was from, and you know, and actually many of them have came to the island for some vacation. So I feel at home. I feel at home. So, and in all the places I've gone, I've been to Louisiana, I've been to Florida, and all is the same. You know, people treat me very well. So, you know, I just see. I won't watch any of these movies again, you know, because they just poison your mind. Sometimes when you see these movies and this stuff, it's on the perspective of the person who creates that, and this is what gets marketed, and this is what you hear and what you see, and then you form your opinion, and when you go out there, it's completely different.
Yeah, definitely. And bike travel is a perfect way for seeing that.
Okay, a little on the technical side. Tell us the audience, what equipment do you use for the bike tour? You know, such a long bike tour, you have to travel very light. What bike do you use for your tour?
Okay, my bike was a very very simple bike, really. It was a specialized rock hopper, so it's quite a strong but simple mountain bike. The frame was steel, so that if it broke, I could weld it. Even in remote parts of Africa, you can still weld steel. I want to keep it simple. I didn't have any suspension. I didn't have clipping pedals, just because I wanted as little to go wrong as possible. I had a lot of gears though to help me get up the hills, and I carried big panniers on the front and on the back, and then I had a like a canoeing bag, a waterproof bag that I would put on top of the back rack as well, with things like my tent and sleeping bag in there as well.
Okay, when you were going to move from a continent, you know, how did you move? Did you get a ship, or you got into plane? For example, when you went from Africa to Argentina to start the other leg of the tour, how did you travel there?
Well, when I left home, I thought that I would just get on a plane and fly, which seems the easiest way. But then once I was pedaling, I thought it would be much more exciting if I could go by boat. So when I got to the end of Africa, I managed to find a sailing boat, and I sailed across the Atlantic Ocean in a 58-foot sailing boat, which took us about 24 days to get across the ocean. So that was fantastic. And then from Alaska, I had to cross the Pacific Ocean. And I found a cargo ship, a big freight ship that took me across the Pacific, which wasn't quite as exciting as the sailing boat, but it was a bit more luxurious. I had my own room, and I just watched pirated DVDs for 9 days across the Pacific, but still, it's more exciting than flying.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Okay, also tell people about your web page and the projects you have, your book, and all the things that you're working for. Tell the people so they know. And I'm going to put a link on the page, on the show notes, for your website. So tell people about your website and all the projects you have.
Okay, great, thank you. My website's roundtheworldbybike.com, and through that you can give money to the charity I was supporting. You can look at some of the pictures from my ride. You can look at a couple of movies. And also, one of the reasons I decided to cycle around the world was because I wanted to write a book. So I've been writing a book, and I've now finished the book about Africa, and that's now available for sale. You can get that on my website, on Amazon, places like that. And you can also read little extracts of it on my website. And right now, as we speak, I'm writing the second half of the book, which I hope to have out by about May time.
That's great. So, Alistair, it was great having you here in the show on the Bike Tourist Podcast, and you are now a member of our community. So come back whenever you like. If you have some new announcement, just feel free, let me know, and we will let the audience know about it. You are part of our family now, so you feel at home here at the Bike Tourist Podcast.
Great, thank you. Muchas gracias.
Oh, you see the language there.
Thank you.
Okay, to all our audience, remember that we have, as I said at the beginning of the program, we have a Spanish version of the show. It's just starting, just show number one is there. I'm preparing more shows, and we're going to do a special edition on touring on Puerto Rico. As we talk in the conversation, there's a lot of problems for newcomers to do this kind of tours here in the island. But we are working on that. We're working on that. So we are going to try to put together some resources that for you bikers to do. It will be a very interesting show. Thanks, Marta, for the idea. Thanks. We are going to, we are looking forward for you to coming here on the island and spend some time when you come here. So say goodbye, Alistair. So we wrap up the program. Alistair, are you there?
Hello, hello. Sorry, I thought that was the end.
No. The end. Okay. So say goodbye, Alistair. Okay, Alistair, say goodbye to everybody. It's not a goodbye. Just a farewell, because this is just starting. Say goodbye.
Thanks very much. Bye bye, everyone.
Okay, so this is it for this time. This is the Bike Tourist Podcast. My name is Gabriel. Goodbye.